Welcome, everybody, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. I'm so happy you all are here to share in this time together. Let's begin, as we usually do, by taking a moment of silence to go within. This is a weekend in which a new year will be born. That's actually a line from the course that we read last week. And so I share this line with you. This year, invest in truth and let it work in peace. Have faith in what has faith in you. Think what you have really seen and heard and recognize it. Can you be alone with witnesses like these? And as we welcome in the new year this week, let us all touch that willingness to take our part in what the Course refers to as the Great Awakening. And all we need to do that, again, is embrace our willingness. And taking a nice mindful breath in and out, and coming together to our perception of this time and place. All right. So we're going to pick up where we left off 2 weeks ago, because we did a Christmas reading last week. If you have the Sparkle Edition, we're on page 190. It's the first full paragraph at the top of the page. It begins, "To communicate is to join." If you have the original edition, it is chapter 8, paragraph 64, also begins, "To communicate is to join." And if you have the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it is page 153, paragraph 12. It's at the very bottom of the page, "To communicate is to join." So we've actually been reading a lot about the body and healing and using the body as communication, which is as a communication device, which is its true purpose. So we're picking up where we left off. To communicate is to join, and to attack is to separate. How can you do both simultaneously with the same thing and not suffer? Perception of the body can be unified only by one purpose. This releases the mind from the temptation to see the body in many lights and gives it over entirely to the one light in which it can be really understood at all. To confuse a learning device with a curriculum goal is a fundamental confusion. Learning can hardly be arrested at its own aids with hope of understanding either the aids or the learning's real purpose. Learning must lead beyond the body to the reestablishment of the power of the mind in it. This can be accomplished only if the mind extends to other minds and does not arrest itself in its extension. So we'll pause there for comments, questions, or insights. And I can actually begin by saying that one of the sentence that really popped out at me when I was reading this is right in the middle of this paragraph. To confuse a learning device with a curriculum goal is a fundamental confusion. And the reason that this stood out to me is that, I'm not sure if everybody heard, but Ken Wapnick, who was the head of, I'm not exactly sure what his title would be, but he established, I believe, the Foundation for Inner Peace and, you know, put together that edition. He passed away on Friday. And, yeah, he actually died of lung cancer, is what my understanding is. And I was really struck by that. And it's sort of, I've been thinking about it a lot. It sort of made me realize that I was, what it brought forward for me is this belief that I realized that I was carrying, that doing the course, quote unquote, would keep me safe. And how could, you know, he, a big teacher of the course, exit perhaps in that manner that he did. And what I realized in being willing to look at that with spirit is that this belief that doing the Course in Miracles keeps you safe, who is the you that it's keeping safe? It's the body again, right? It's the ego, I should say. It's still
interesting.
Yeah, it's still that fixation on wanting to save the body, on believing that it is something, worthwhile. And so that was a big realization for me yet again to be evidence for the insidiousness of the ego, that it really will get in there and use anything, even the course, on its behalf. And so that was just sort of a powerful insight for me. And so I've been sort of sitting with this throughout the weekend, but that was just really a profound sense for me, that to confuse a learning device with a curriculum goal. In other words, to confuse the body, which is a learning device, with a curriculum goal, which is, let's say, salvation or waking up. If I'm saying that this learning device, if I'm confusing it with salvation, that's obviously confusion, and that's what, in a sense, I felt like I was doing with this belief of, you know, doing the course keeps me safe. Who is the me that I am still identified with? That's what needs to be looked at with spirit and be healed, because the course is very, very, very clear and pretty uncompromising that, you know, when we, our safety lies in truth, that death is an illusion, and that, you know, all these wonderful, very comforting, very peaceful teachings that the Course stresses over and over again. So this is actually a big teaching that sort of really makes me look forward to Nook Sanchez's upcoming release of her book, The End of Death, because she addresses a lot of this, where it's our job to also look at our belief in death, that if we believe that death is a natural part of life, how can we possibly trust in God's love? Those are almost two different things. So I'm really looking forward to her book. So anyway, I'll pause there and see if anything came up for anybody as I was sharing that.
Well, wait a minute. So what you just said, that to believe that death is a part of life, yes, it doesn't make any sense, does it?
Right? Like, to accept that as a natural part of being here, who proved that wrong but Jesus? He kind of did the ultimate demonstration that, you know, that there's no substance to death. It's not real. It is an illusion. And so it's a pretty profound thing to begin to question, to look at our belief that it is, in fact, something that is, quote-unquote, part of life here. So
we basically just transcend the body.
I always go back to what the Course says about death being, it can be a gentle laying down of the body when its usefulness is over. It's not sick, it's not old, it's not, doesn't have anything wrong with it. Its usefulness is simply done, and so we lay it by. And so, yeah, I don't know what the word is, whether it's transcending the body or just, expanding our awareness beyond the body, where we just sort of, you know, shed it like an old coat.
my mother kind of did that.
Really?
You know, she lived a very long life, and in one afternoon, she was gone.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't, there was no sign of sickness or anything. She did pass from a heart attack, but it was, nobody had any idea that she had any problem.
Yeah.
My husband too, really.
Really.
You know, same thing in an afternoon. So it doesn't have to be real dramatic. It, honestly, to me, it was like, wow, if I could exit that easy, woo!
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Like, from an outside perspective, if somebody could look into my head and think about or witness, you know, my thoughts about death and, like, just thinking about this kind of thing, I probably look pretty morbid from the outside, but it's actually, like, a very freeing thing to look at with spirit, all these beliefs that we hold about death and being willing to question them rather than just to sort of shrug it off and be like, oh, well, it's just part of what happens here.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty liberating.
I really feel like, and it's easier to have this conversation with people that you can talk to about the idea of death not being real, but I really feel that spirit, there's a collective unlearning of how we communicate happening, and I feel that the world is, you know, on a grander scale, opening up to the idea of communicating through intuition and different ways of communicating that are beyond what our bodies can see and whatnot. And I feel that that's the direction that spirit is taking us, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes total sense, and I completely agree with you. I really like how you use that term, collective unlearning, because what the Course is saying is that you don't have your ego and my ego and their ego. It's one ego. There's one split mind. It's one ego. It's one tiny mad idea, and it's that all of us, you know, playing our part in undoing that, undoing the ego, undoing that one tiny mad idea of separation.
Yeah, because we don't exit. We don't exit anywhere. That's the thing. Like, and you mentioned Nook Sanchez before, and before I started studying the Course and, you know, like, learning to follow my own intuition, I was really afraid of death. Like, I went through most of my life being, like, deathly afraid of losing people, and now my understanding being what it is and being able to receive messages from folks that are no longer in bodies, so to speak, I'm not afraid the way that I was before. And I feel that that's the point, like, that's why. And I was listening to, I think Nook was being interviewed by Kenneth, what's his name? Kenneth
Bach.
Yeah, and she was talking about how she receives messages from her husband, Thomas, and or partner. I know they were married at one point and then they weren't married. But it's very much how I've received messages, like, you just feel it, and it's not about, you know, speaking, or it's something beyond the physical.
That's beautiful, and that's exactly what this whole section has been talking about, that, you know, the body is a means of communication, and to think that communication stops at the body is a mistake. That true communication, when we're able to, again, be in touch with that higher part of our mind, the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it, that's as we tap into that communication, that ends separation. We see that there is no gap between us and our brother. That seeming gap doesn't actually exist.
Yeah, and I feel called to share something that's been coming up for me recently, because I feel like it might be helpful to the group or open up some further conversation. But I've been having a lot of body issues come up recently, like about my physical body and how I feel about my body and how the world teaches us that to be quote-unquote good, we need to change the way we, you know, look at our body or exercise and eat healthy and all these things to change to meet this sort of standard of what we're taught as perfection. And I've been taking this to spirit, and lately the message that I've been receiving is to learn to accept my body the way it is and not necessarily change it. That learning to love my body, and that's been like completely, like, who really teaches that other than the Course? I don't know. You know, like, it's more about loving my body right now and accepting it the way that it is instead of making resolutions to change my body. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So it's been really interesting, and I just wanted to share that.
Oh, thank you. That's a really, really powerful teaching and learning.
Yeah.
Very powerful. If we're, again, you know, if we're trying, if we're invested in trying to change the body, or invested in the body being that important, again, who is it that we're identified with? We can't be identified with spirit then. We have to be identified with our small self, because that's what we're looking to as something that's worthwhile. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, it's just interesting because I came into this life with what the world labels as a type of disability, and it's physically noticeable sometimes, you know, when I'm walking or whatever. And for a lot of years, I've just felt like, you know, like, how can I fix it? How can I change my body so that I'm accepted by other people, and, you know, accepting myself? And it's like, lately my angels and everything have been like, no, it's not about changing your body. It's about using your body to teach others and yourself that you're okay the way that you are. Mm-hmm. And that's like a total reverse of what the world says.
Wow.
And it's just like, whoa. Like, I understand now, like, why I came, mm-hmm, and why I chose to come in the way that I did.
Oh, Deidre.
And like, you know, like, even it's even difficult to have conversations with people about choosing to come into your body, because that's such a foreign concept for people too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they chose, you know, like, you choose who your parents are on a spiritual level. You choose what your life experience is. You write the script on a spiritual level before you come. So it's just been really interesting for me.
Wow.
To really, like, open up to that with spirit, and sometimes a bit scary, but in a good way.
Yeah, that's good. It's really, really beautiful and inspiring that you've been able to look at this with spirit and let it come up and come forth, and to share your teaching, your learning with us as well.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's not just my lesson, it's the world's lesson.
Absolutely.
Everybody
has that idea.
Oh, yeah. I have to change myself. You know, I have to be better than I am. I have to be this or that. And it's, you don't.
Yes. Wow. Well said.
You know, I just went to a little gathering tonight. My daughters and I were invited to a friend's house. And their daughter is, seems, honestly, she's 18 years old, but she supposedly is on the level of a 12-year-old. And they're constantly correcting her and kind of, you know, you feel a tension going on there. And she seems more normal than me. So fun. More, I could have spent the whole evening with her. There's, you know, that wonderful innocence that is so refreshing, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And this world really is upside down.
Mm. It sure is.
It's just upside down.
Corinne,
I got to tell you, it has been so helpful. So in the last few weeks, we've talked about, you know, seeing it right, seeing people, instead of buying into any of the drama around, you know, conditions, physical conditions and all of this, just transcending that and seeing them whole and healthy. It's, you've got me really thinking about it. It is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And you really cut out so much of the stress in your own life when you do that, you know?
You sure do. Yeah, and it's, it's as simple as being willing to see the Holy Spirit in another, because then you're then you're acknowledging it in yourself. That's all. Oh, let's dive back into the next paragraph. And actually, before I forget, I just wanted to mention, since we're talking about Nook Sanchez, I mentioned her next book is coming out. It's coming out in February. She just gave me the date. I'm going to be interviewing her for Manchester, and I'm thrilled. So if you have questions, let me know.
Oh,
I'm more than happy to ask her.
Has she already written a book?
She has. It's called, I believe it's called Take Me to Truth. And there might even be another one. If you go on Amazon.com and search for her name, it'll come up.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I have a little time now, and I am going to look into her and also the other author that you talk about. I can't think of his name right now.
The guy who had the near-death experience? Yes.
Yes.
Dr. Eben Alexander.
Yes.
Proof of Heaven. Yes.
I want to read about.
Yes. Love learning from him, from his experience. So anyway, let's dive back into the next paragraph.
Taryn, can I just ask a question real quick?
Please. Absolutely.
The last line of the last paragraph where it says, the mind extends to other minds and does not arrest itself in its extension.
Mm-hmm.
What's your interpretation of the word arrest?
So that to me... Let me just read this again. I'm going to just read the last two sentences. Learning must lead beyond the body to the reestablishment of the power of the mind in it. This can be accomplished only if the mind extends to other minds and does not arrest itself in its extension. I interpret that as if arresting the mind's extension means we're stopping at the body. It's like, this is it. You know, it's seeing the body as a... cause rather than an effect of our mind. It's stopping the extension of the mind at the body. So rather than having that idea that the sole purpose of the body is as a means of communication, you know, as a communication device, it's rather than seeing it as a communication device, it's making the body as an end, so to speak, as a goal, as rather than the means that it is.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, good. The arrest of the mind's extension is the cause of all illness, because only extension is the mind's function. The opposite of joy is depression. When your learning promotes depression instead of joy, you cannot be listening to God's joyous teacher, and you must be learning amiss. To see a body as anything except a means of pure extension is to limit your mind and hurt yourself. Health is therefore nothing more than united purpose. If the body is brought under the purpose of the mind, the body becomes whole because the mind's purpose is one. Attack can only be an assumed purpose of the body because apart from the mind, the body has no purpose at all. So
wow.
That then reminds me of just how the body is neutral. The body is a neutral thing, and we're the ones that are putting all the meaning that it has onto it. It actually is totally neutral. It doesn't have a purpose at all apart from the mind. Again, the purpose with the mind is to be that communication device. I heard a wow. What else came up for you?
The purpose is only in the mind, but it's just a really powerful reminder for me as well. That's all.
It's a good reminder. And it's also a really powerful statement, that very first sentence, the arrest of the mind's extension is the cause of all illness because only extension is the mind's function. So again, that means to me that if we're identifying solely with our egos, and again, that's it, we sort of stop there. I am Corinne and nothing more. That, as we only identify with that small part of our mind, the ego, not even small part of our mind, I shouldn't say it that way. If we're only identified with the ego and we're arresting that extension of love, that's the cause of illness. So if we're looking to the body again as an end rather than a means, that's a cause of illness.
You know, and that is one of the reasons why I've had a couple of things that are supposed, you know, like I had shingles on my face, and oh, according to the world, you're going to be down for 6-8 weeks. It's terribly painful. Oh, there's a whole big drama thing around that. And if I had stopped at that and just believed what the doctor was telling me, what people were telling me about it, it of course it would have gone on for 6 or 8 mm-hmm. weeks. But I didn't stop at that. The first thing I did was call a friend who's also a Course in Miracles facilitator, and we, you know, went into this meditation together, and everything turned instantly. I mean, I got on the correct medication within 3 days. It was completely done and over with.
I love it.
So that totally makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's happened many other times in many other situations since I've been doing the Course in Miracles.
That's an awesome example, Paula. If I could share another example too. I woke up 7 a.m. Friday morning from feeling extremely nauseous, and I was throwing up. I had all sorts of things, you know, my fever. I watched it spike up to about 101 Friday morning, totally out of the blue. And my husband is home from winter break right now, and he also studies the course, and I said to him two things. One was, please don't see me, be willing to not see me as Corinne, be willing to see past this ugly picture that you're seeing right now, no matter how much I might whine and whimper. And when I'm whining and whimpering and still willing again to, you know, recognize that it's my mind that needs healing, it's not my body, I was working this process too. I also asked him too, as I'm whining and whimpering, and he has perhaps empathy or sympathy coming up, to give that empathy or sympathy to the Holy Spirit rather than to keep it and just, you know, maybe direct it back at me. Because then I said, you know, the Holy Spirit will use it on behalf of healing instead. And do you know, that thing, it disappeared in less than 24 hours. So I have not been that sick with that high of a fever or vomiting and whatnot for that. For a long, I can't even tell you when, how many years it's been. So it was pretty cool. Not that it was cool, to get it, but you know what I'm saying.
It was yucky, but
it's nice to have
but the Holy
somebody,
Spirit.
It's nice to have somebody that you can turn to say, please don't join with me in this picture of sickness that I'm in right now. Because as the Course says, you know, sickness, all sickness is a defense against the truth. It's the ego's strongest witness for itself. It's the ego's strongest witness that you are a body and you can be vulnerable and can be hurt. And just having that, you know, other person, and it doesn't have to be somebody that you're close to, in your immediate family, it can be, you know, anybody that you might know who's a Course student, somebody on Miracle Share, somebody online, and you can just say, you know, please be willing to join with me in to see past this picture rather than, you know, affirm the picture. It's really helpful. It's really, really helpful.
That's so interesting that you bring that up, Corinne, because over the holiday I was with family, and my grandmother had something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was really, you know, feeling worried about my grandmother and whatnot. And I checked in with the angels, as I often do. And they just let me know that, you know, that she was healing and everything. And so I was really conscious in my language that I made the choice not to talk about the thing that was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, everyone else was sort of like, you know, how are you feeling? How are you doing? Are you feeling better? You know, and to me, energetically, that feels like giving attention to the problem, right? So I was really trying not to do that. And it's just interesting how the world teaches that love is the other way around, kind of like what we were talking about last week with her, I've forgotten her name, and her friend that had something going on.
I don't remember who brought up that example. I think it was
anyway,
2 weeks ago,
yeah.
But anyway.
You know what I'm talking about. And so, because I didn't want to contribute to making that person's struggle any worse for them by continuing to talk about it. And it's interesting, for the first time probably ever, I didn't feel any guilt for not taking on the person's story, which I thought was really interesting.
You know, in that kind of situation, because I was just, my daughter loves her little cat. Her cat is 11 years old. I mean, it's like her child. She loves this little animal. And there's been a couple of situations where she's worried about the cat. And looking at the cat, I started to feel very worried about the cat. But I honestly believe it's the same thing. It's still a little body, and I'm going to see it right. And so I found myself in this situation. She took the cat to the vet, and the vet seems to think the cat is okay, but there's still could be some problem going on there. So in the middle of all of this, you know, conversation about the cat, I just, even though I have felt kind of fearful about the cat, the idea to give that fear to the Holy Spirit and to just maintain, just like you were saying, Deidre, you know, not to get into the drama with it and not to, you know, I just kept saying to Mira, let's just see this right. Let's, you know, and I didn't get into it with her, but my own doubt and fear, I really had to hand over. And it really went well.
Yeah.
So I think in those situations, you know, the Holy Spirit is the solution.
Absolutely, always.
Yeah.
Always, always, always. Because if we're trying to just not buy into it on our own, or, you know, trying to talk ourselves out of the fear alone, it's not going to have, maybe it'll help a little bit, but it's not going to have that deep transformative undoing, you know, of the ego, in a step in that direction that it does when we turn to the Holy Spirit and let the Holy Spirit do its job rather than us trying to do the Holy Spirit's job ourselves.
Also, there was another, sorry, Corinne, I didn't know.
No,
I was finished. There was another part to it too. I had to be very conscious that I was not saying to my mom, like, don't worry about Nana, because I would just be letting my ego tell her ego what to do.
Right.
So I had to be really careful, like, to just let her worry.
Right.
And take my, whatever was going on for me, to Spirit.
Oh, Deidre, you're hitting on such an important point. Continue.
Yeah,
I don't want to interrupt you, but I want to add.
No, that was it.
Well, that's huge, because the temptation to correct a brother is enormously tempting. I mean, it's the draw of wanting to do that, and this is where my in-laws have been huge teachers for me, because I so many times have wanted to get in there, and actually I won't just even say them, a number of other family members that I can think of, the temptation to want to say, no, you should do it this way. If we're attempting to correct a brother, we're seeing through our own ego, period. And therefore the correction is up to us to allow our own, you know, to turn once again to the Holy Spirit to bring whatever it is that's coming up, just like you said, Deidre, to the Holy Spirit. That's huge. I feel like you're hitting on such an important point there.
And those thoughts did happen. Like, the thoughts happened, but I just didn't. I just took that to Spirit, too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. So glad you brought that up. That temptation to correct a brother is enormous. Let's tackle another paragraph. You are not limited by the body, and thought cannot be made flesh. Yet mind can be manifested through the body if it goes beyond it and does not interpret it as limitation. I'm just going to reread that sentence. Yet mind can be manifested through the body if it goes beyond it and does not interpret it as limitation. Whenever you see another as limited to or by the body, you are imposing this limit on yourself. Are you willing to accept this when your whole purpose for learning should be to escape from limitations? To conceive of the body as a means of attack of any kind and to entertain even the possibility that joy could possibly result is a clear-cut indication of a poor learner. He has accepted a learning goal in obvious contradiction to the unified purpose of the curriculum and is interfering with his ability to accept its purpose as his own.
Wow.
What comes up?
Well, I was just thinking about what Paula said earlier about her friend's daughter and the daughter being corrected often. If we could just learn that there is no correction to be made.
Right.
And accept what is. Because I can't tell you how many times the world has told me, well, we could just do this surgery and fix you.
Mm.
You know, and what a message that, and I'm not knocking surgery because there has mm-hmm. been times where it's helped.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is that the world's eyes looks at my body and says there's something to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is there's nothing to be fixed. I'm in this body, but I'm not my body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So
I'm in this body, but not of this body. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
That's huge.
And it's not just me. It's tons of other people, like
mm-hmm.
kids that have, I don't know, autism or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to be fit.
Yeah.
And if the world can just learn that, like, that's why Spirit... That's why those people come in those situations, to teach,
mm-hmm.
to use their bodies as a teaching device to teach love.
There is a documentary called The Teachings of John. I don't know if you've ever seen this thing. He's he is the most powerful teacher. Wouldn't call him a mongoloid, I don't know, but he's extremely he is generating love in a way that you can't miss it. His parents, I mean, it is the most, Google it, because
okay.
it's exactly what you're talking about. He does not need to be fixed in any way, shape, or form. He is the most phenomenal teacher of joy and love.
Wow. If you think about it, too, fixing is another form of attack, right?
Oh, of course it is.
It's a act of, or even a thought of thinking, trying to make things be other than they are, and again, doing it on our own accord, affirming that so-and-so is their body and they need to change, they need to be fixed. Therefore, you know, that's an attack on ourselves because it's affirming that we are, in fact, limited to a body. So that just came forward for me, too.
You know,
powerful stuff.
I read a line in the course recently, and I think I mentioned it on the call before, but it says, the world is the complete opposite of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And if that isn't what we're talking about right now, this world is the complete opposite of heaven. It's nuts. That's all.
And I can't even tell you the years that I spent, like my adolescence, growing up, trying to change myself and make myself fit in so I would be loved.
Oh.
And it's why I developed anxiety problems. It's why my intuition scared me and I turned it off. You know, it's why I turned away from who I am. And so now I feel like this is what I'm supposed to teach or help to teach people, is that you're okay the way that you are.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
You have my 100%, 150% support and excitement. And
me too.
Wow. Let's read. We'll finish up this section tonight. Joy is unified purpose, and unified purpose is only God's. When yours is unified, it is his. Interfere with his purpose, and you need salvation. You have condemned yourself, but condemnation is not of God. Therefore, it is not true. No more are any of the results of your condemnation. When you see a brother as a body, you are condemning him because you have condemned yourself. Yet if all condemnation is unreal, and it must be unreal since it is a form of attack, then it can have no results. So what comes up for me in this paragraph is really just that we have to get out of our own way and accept that it is done. Healing has been accomplished. We need do nothing. We need merely rest in our innocence. I have written in the margins here, it's funny, just in response to this last sentence. Yet if all condemnation is unreal, and it must be unreal since it is a form of attack, then it can have no results. I have in the margin, we're not screwed. Yay! Let's actually just finish this right up and then we'll talk. Do not allow yourselves to suffer from the results of what is not true. Free your minds from the belief that this is possible. In its complete impossibility and your full awareness of its complete impossibility lie your only hope for release. But what other hope would you want? Freedom from illusions lies only in not believing them. There is no attack, but there is unlimited communication, and therefore unlimited power and wholeness. The power of wholeness is extension. Do not arrest your thought in this world, and you will open your mind to creation in God. I love that last sentence. Do not arrest your thought in this world, and you will open your mind to creation in God. What we focus on comes close to us. It comes near to us. So if we're looking to this world, if we're looking to the ego, if we're, you know, fixating on the body and trying to fix it, that's what becomes our reality. If we are instead being willing, again, we don't have to do it ourselves, just be willing to see differently, to allow the Holy Spirit's perception to take the place of our perception, we no longer stop our thoughts in this world and we open our minds to the creation in God, as it says.
Freedom
comments,
from
questions.
Illusion lies only in not believing them.
Mm.
Well, that's it.
It isn't. And at the same time, you know, it sounds so simple, and yet when we think about what our illusions are that we believe, they feel really strong and really real and almost impossible to not believe them. And that's where this process of undoing, this process of atonement, that as we bring our perceptions to the Holy Spirit and ask for, you know, the truth to replace those illusions in our mind, and we have these very real, very affirming experiences that teach us that there is something beyond the body, that this isn't who we are. That's where it's not that we just, you know, choose to stop believing in something that feels real to us. It's that belief falls away. It's just a simple, you know, it's a simple falling away. So it's not hard at all. And it comes,
you know,
when we're ready. We can't force it.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you, this Christmas, I felt over my head because I have a small house and I invited my husband's family and my family. So now I got like 30 people coming. And I knew I shouldn't do that, but I felt confident that if I did that with the Holy Spirit, it would be okay. And that is exactly what I did. And it unfolded in just the most effortless. It turned out to be the most wonderful Christmas. I cannot even tell you. But I kept, you know, I felt fearful and apprehensive at times, and I'd turn it over. And I just kept doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. My neighbor wound up asking me to take care of her cat at the same time. Now, that gave me a place to take all this extra stuff, like my cabinets. I needed a place for all of the desserts and all of the food. And I was able to take everything over to her, you know, get stuff out of here to make room. Mm-hmm. Everything just clicked and clicked and clicked and clicked. The day was just amazing. Mm. It was amazing. I had 30 people in this little house. I wound up having the whole thing. I wound up having the whole thing catered. The caterer, the food was better than I could have ever cooked. I couldn't have even purchased the food for the price he charged me. It was, I mean, he really, I would go to this restaurant every week, so maybe he cut me a break or something. I don't know, but the whole thing was like effortless accomplishment. But I, you know, it was just, every time I got really anxious or fearful, I just kept turning it over. I just felt confident that the Holy Spirit would get me through this. Mm-hmm. And it really worked. So, I mean, this is so practical.
It is so practical. It's very, very, very practical. And if it doesn't feel practical, then, you know, if it feels too out there, it just means that, you know, we'll get it when we're ready to get it, and it's okay. But it is very, very practical. You're absolutely right.
But I think the more you work with the Holy Spirit,
mm-hmm.
oh, it's so powerful.
Yeah.
It's so incredibly powerful. Just remembering to do that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Anybody else have anything come up? Any questions, comments, examples, experiences? Anything whatsoever?
Hey, everyone. This is Priscilla. I just joined the call.
Hi, Priscilla.
Hi. I haven't been on the call for a couple of weeks, and I just was itching to... to be connected with everything that happens with this group on a weekly basis. I feel like it's a real, it's very grounding, sort of like mm-hmm. anchoring, you know. So thank you all for coming together and doing this. I did have a really wonderful experience this week that I would love to share. It's probably, I think I'm newer to the course than maybe most of the people on the call, and it maybe what I'm describing it has already happened to you guys many times over, but for me or maybe it has happened to me before, but it was the first time I just really was conscious of it. I was very angry, feeling angry because a client is holding back on paying me, and I was going through the thoughts of, like, what am I going to do about it, and how am I going to, you know, make it so that this person feels like they have to pay me, you know, just in the grips of wanting to control the situation. And I remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about just having the tiny bit of willingness to give it to the Holy Spirit. And there was this tiny place in my heart that was like, you know what, however, even though I went through all the steps of, like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to say that, there was that willingness in my heart to give it to the Holy Spirit and have the Holy Spirit guide me. And then immediately after, I was driving, and I see a car go by and a van go by, a work van, and it had the word peace on it.
Mm.
And as soon as I saw the word peace, I felt the peace inside of me, and I immediately let it go completely.
Wow.
And I just felt, I felt peace. It was so strange. I don't remember having that kind of experience of just this lightness of going from, like, just, you know, you at least when I get mad, you know, I get kind of headachy and I'm tense and I'm tight. And then all of a sudden, just seeing the word peace, and all of a sudden I became peace. So it was beautiful.
But that's really
so beautiful.
That willingness to give it to the Holy Spirit is the result of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was a miracle. That was that shift in perception. That was that return of peace. That was an absolute miracle. That's absolutely beautiful.
It sure was a miracle, because I know me, when I get mad, you know, when I perceive the thing that always gets me to this bad place is if I feel a sense of injustice, whether it be an injustice towards someone else or towards me, this idea of, like, life is not fair and good people get stepped on and that kind of thing. As soon as I perceive that, I really just become, I struggle. I really, really struggle. So that was definitely a miracle.
That's huge, yeah.
You know,
wow.
that line, freedom from illusions lies only in not believing them, is perfect in that situation, because the world really teaches us that there is injustice.
Yeah, definitely.
And in truth, it's not even possible. So, you know, again, it is an illusion. The illusion of injustice, or the illusion. Oh.
Right, and we can buy into it and, you know, really try to fight for our outcome, which is being right? Or we can be happy and choose that miracle and allow that peace to come back. And, you know, you reminded me of my girlfriend who freaks out every time she sees one of those big trucks that say God on the side, G-O-D. It's some kind of freight carrier. She always goes bonkers when she sees that truck go by, because it's always at the right time. So.
Always at the right time. Exactly. I love that.
Thank you for sharing that, Priscilla. Thank you for being here. And is that Deidre that I hear?
Yeah. I was just going to share something that happened to me. I had a situation that's similar to you, Priscilla, where a client didn't pay me for an angel session. And she had asked me to give her some leeway to pay her, and I agreed to it, and I waited about 3 months, and it was really bothering me that she hadn't paid me. And I did have some anger come up for me, and in the course of taking it to spirit and and whatnot, I realized that the lesson that I learned wasn't that the client paid me. The lesson was that I needed to set boundaries for myself.
Yes.
And that it wasn't okay for me to let people not pay me up front.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I just wanted to share that because I felt that I felt called to do that. So now I've learned to ask for people to pay me before I render my service.
That's wonderful. That is actually, it's actually made me more astute about how do I want to move forward with growing my services and how I render them. Maybe asking for a routine, or I'm playing with different models. But that's. Thank you for sharing that. Oh, thank you. That's
You're welcome.
Oh, well, we're at the top of the hour, and I thank each one of you so much for being here. Again, this is always, always a powerful time for me. I know, Priscilla, you said it's grounding for you. It's so grounding for me as well. So thank you all so much for sharing the journey, and we'll resume next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for sharing.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Bye.
Bye.